I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
There's some sort of veil being lifted on our monetary system where, compared to right now, our monetary system is managed by either the Federal Reserve or the central bank, the United States government.
They're trying their best, I'm sure, right? But do they always get it right? No, they don't always get it right. And do they have undue control? And have they, over the past, 10 to 20 years, printed money more in favor of like the establishment and the banking system? This is back to the Cantillon effect that we were talking about earlier, where this money printing is not going to average citizens in the US. It's going to bankers and people who hold assets. That's why if you want to play the monetary game in the United States, you can't just hold dollars in a savings account anymore, right? Like, you're not making any money that way. You have to play the game. You have to buy assets. You have to invest. And so people are saying, well, should a small group of individuals in Washington be able to turn the dials on the money system? What happens if they become corrupt? And so this is a ground up movement to say, no, we want to build our money system. And by the way, not just central banking, but also commercial banking on credibly neutral protocols where, that can't be biased, that can't be corrupted.
Okay, welcome back to the next episode of Yang Speaks and the next episode of our limited series, The Future Of. Folks, today we are talking about something that touches everybody. We are talking about the future of money. Yes, the future of money, and frankly, is the future of cryptocurrency, which is probably our future. I've got two people on this podcast. One you all know and love, Carly Riley, who was our finance director on the presidential, but if you listen to this podcast, you know she called Robinhood blowing up the stock market in our bold predictions for 2021. So she is essentially a guru in this and really sees the markets very, very interestingly, in my opinion. So I wanted her perspective. But the crypto expert we brought on is a guy who I've really got to know and like a lot. His name is Ryan Sean Adams. So he's a crypto investor, but he's the creator of the Bankless newsletter and podcast. And what Bankless does, it was perfect for me, frankly, in this, but it helps you understand what crypto is and how this whole ecosystem works, but also starts getting you on the path of getting away from your bank and getting into the cryptocurrency world. So if you're like, I think a lot of the Yang Gang, which is crypto curious or crypto fans, but don't really understand it, this is the perfect 101 episode to start, and then it gets into more complicated stuff. So we're talking about what cryptocurrency is, we're talking about why it's taking off, why people are passionate about it, how people are using it, but then I want to talk about the future of it, how it's working, how it's going to impact our lives, what this means, and frankly, how important it is for not just white dudes like me to get involved now, how we need to get the people it's meant to help. If this is going to democratize our economy and our financial system, we need people of all, frankly, all sorts of backgrounds and make a very conscious effort towards inclusion in terms of this building process. Because if we don't like our current system, when we rebuild the next one, we have to do it better than the last time or we end up with the same situation. So we talk about that a lot. It's a fascinating episode. I'm pretty confident you guys are gonna like this. So join me, join Ryan, join Carly, talking about the future of money on Yang Speaks. All right, welcome to the next episode our limited series, The Future Of, and today we are talking about something that touches all of us, the future of money, the future of that cash money, or let's say lack of cash money, depending on what we end up, where we end up as a society. And I'm excited today. So I'm joined today by, I'm going to call her our recurring co-host, Carly Riley. Many of you who are in the Yang universe and in the Yang gang are familiar with Carly. She was our finance director on the presidential, is now working at a venture fund called Kairos. I'm not going to call you a crypto expert, Carly, by any means, but you do know how to raise money and you do understand the finance and you worked at a hedge fund before. So I'm happy you have your perspective. Thanks for joining.
And I once made $3,000 on Monero.
Wow.
That's obscure. Well done.
There it is. And that love, that smooth, silky voice you hear next to Carly's is Ryan Sean Adams. We're glad you're here, Ryan. Ryan is a crypto investor and the creator of something I found fascinating. It's called Bankless and the Bankless newsletter and podcast. And Ryan can tell you, will tell you a lot more about this as we go. But what they are really great at is, frankly, lowering the barrier to get people in the crypto game. Now, that's probably not even how he would want to describe it, but that's how Zach described it as he took the Bankless crash course before. So, Ryan, thanks for joining. Welcome to the Future of Money on Yang Speaks.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to be here. I think it is about time for Yang Gang and the crypto community to unite, to meet. This is a great cross-section. It's kind of like a Marvel team-up. So I am pumped for this episode, guys.
It's fun because this is my general sense of the Yang Gang right now. And I don't know, hopefully you guys listening to this, where it's like, we're all crypto-friendly, I think, where people see cryptocurrency moving like, yeah, new money. anti-establishment, like screw the banks, screw Wall Street. This is new. It's interesting. Power of the people. But then the reality is most of us probably don't really know how it works or the nitty gritties of it. Maybe read an article or two, maybe even bought some Bitcoin or bought some Ethereum or bought something, but you're maybe kind of a novice in this. And I know certainly I am. That's how I've fit in here. So what I wanted to do, I wanted to take this, I kind of wanted to cover three things. One, I wanted to do a kind of a basic 101 on cryptocurrency and what it is, how it works. So for those of you who've like been talking big game, maybe don't actually know the ins and outs, like we can dive in. Then I wanted to level set where we are today. And lastly, I want to talk about what this means as a society, like where this looks like in 10, 20 years. Because I think it's been 12 years or so since crypto really kind of started. It's come a long way and it's got a long way to go. So Ryan, why don't we start with that as Carly and I kind of just pick your brain here. Like give us a little bit about yourself, where you started, but then start to give us this, like the basic answer to what the heck is cryptocurrency? How does it work?
Yeah. So like, I guess a little bit about me, what I love about crypto is that I'm just a regular guy. So just a regular guy on the crypto journey. I started in healthcare tech, somewhat like Andrew Yang. 2014, I discovered Bitcoin, got into crypto that way. And then I just fell down the rabbit hole. And that's how many people in crypto will describe the feeling of learning about this new money system. It's just falling down the rabbit hole. And I like to say, like many millennials, I was born too early for the internet, but I was born just in time for crypto. And this feels just as big and as impactful as the early internet. So I found myself sucked into crypto. I quit my corporate job in 2017.
Where were you?
I was in healthcare tech, so I was at a company called Premier. It's a large hospital group purchasing organization that had some healthcare informatics stuff. Anyway, so I jumped out, and I like to say now I don't work for a company any longer. I work for algorithms. I work for protocols. As weird as that is, but I think more and more of us will find that we work for these crypto money things, these crypto protocols in the future, and we can get into that. So I started Bankless. It's a newsletter podcast program in 2019 with my co-host, and we just help people go on what we call, Zach, the Bankless journey, which is basically, I'm sure we'll get into this, but it's basically using these crypto systems as your banking system rather than traditional banks, rather than JP Morgan or a Wells Fargo, using it in your everyday life. So it's more than just buying crypto and holding it for the long term. It's actually using crypto to go bankless.
You talk about like going down this rabbit hole and that being a common journey for folks. Like, what does that look like? Where did that start? Sort of, you're starting to discover cryptocurrency or Bitcoin, I imagine specifically. Like, what is Bitcoin? How do people get sucked in this rabbit hole? And like, what were you learning in that process?
Well, so I think it's important to understand like what crypto really is, because there's tons of buzzwords, you know, blockchains, like what is that? There's Bitcoin, there's Ethereum, there's this thing that you may have heard of called decentralized finance now that's cropping up more and more. So like, what are all these buzzwords? Really to me, what crypto is it's a social movement. This is about money by the people for the people, because the key thing that it does, the benefit that it provides people and that it provides society, is that it allows anyone in the world access to a banking system. Anyone in the world. So your geography shouldn't dictate the banking system quality that you have. And crypto eliminates geography. All you need is an internet connection and a keyboard, and you can tap into the best banking system in the world. It's also a system of freedom. So we could get into this, but there are a lot of problems with the central banking and how money is printed today. We've seen over the past 10 to 20 years this what we call the Cantillon effect, which is whenever the money printer starts going, it tends to go to the people closest to the money spigot. So it tends to go to the bankers and the wealthy. And we see that in the form of asset inflation. So for the last 10 years, right? Stocks have been on a tear, real estate's been on a tear, but wages, they've been stagnant. This is because of the Cantillon effect. So this, essentially the movement is a money system by the people, for the people, from the ground up, where everyone has access to a credibly neutral money system. And that term's super important, credibly neutral money system.
How does it work? Let's start with that very simple question.
I think there's lots of ways to kind of explain how it works, right? But my favorite way is, think about the early internet, right? And so this is a next evolution of the internet. So if you think of the early internet as kind of like the first internet, it's really a communication protocol, right? We can create media on it, but it lacked one thing. It lacked the ability to create digital scarcity. So everything on the internet, you can copy and paste, right? So if there's an image, or if there's some text or some content, I can copy, paste, I can replicate that. What cryptocurrency does is it creates this like unlock for civilization, this unlock for humanity. And that unlock is digital scarcity. So cryptocurrency, unlike the rest of everything else on the internet, cannot be copy and pasted. If I own a Bitcoin, it's mine. You can't, Zach or Carly, you can't just like copy and paste that on a website and make it yours. So in crypto, they call this preventing the double spend problem. And that's really the societal achievement, the unlock. In 2009, with the Bitcoin white paper and the Bitcoin network, we created this next layer of the internet, next chapter of the internet, called digital scarcity. And it turns out that allows us to create really cool things like digital assets. And the first thing we decided to create with Bitcoin was a digital money, or a digital store of value. So how crypto achieves this is with cryptography, right? So we could talk about that a little bit, plus economics, right? So it makes it very costly to attack the network. And through those two mechanisms, we've created digital scarcity.
I have a Bitcoin. It's Zach's. It's got my own cryptography, let's call it fingerprint on it. And then I give it to Carly in exchange for something. Is it still the exact same thing, or is it now Carly's with her fingerprint on it and something completely different, and my old Bitcoin is disappeared? Help me, because I like, dollars have their own serial numbers on them, so technically you can't copy paste. Like, how is that different?
It's very similar, actually, to dollars, right? So the way to think about cryptocurrency is that it is a bearer asset, right? And so what is a bearer asset? Well, in the physical world, a bearer asset would be something that you hold and possess. And when you hand it to someone else or give it to someone else, then they hold it and possess it. They're now in possession of it. So the most like famous bearer asset that we use in the real world is cash money. Cash money. When I give you cash money, Zach or Carly, then I no longer hold that $20 bill that I just gave you. It's gone from my possession, and then you then hold it, right? Or gold is similar in this way. If I have a nugget of gold or a gold bar and I give it to you, then I no longer own it and you own it, transaction complete, and no one can take it away from us, right? That's the thing. So other forms of digital money, if it's numbers in your Wells Fargo account, right? Wells Fargo, you don't actually own that. These are just representations of money on the Wells Fargo like ledger system. You don't act, right. It's not a bare asset.
If I buy a cup of coffee at Starbucks, I've technically given them money, but realistically that actual cash money is not given to Starbucks by the credit card company for 2-3 days. Is that like, am I picking up you're putting down?
Exactly. You're picking it up. Yeah. So the key thing is there's no middleman. There's no Visa in the middle of this transaction. There's no Wells Fargo bank.
As if we're handing something to each other.
It's just the same. It's like actual physical possession has just been transmitted from me to you, only it's happened digitally. That's what digital scarcity gives us, right?
This podcast is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Going online without ExpressVPN is like changing while leaving your window wide open. You might not have anything to hide, but why give randos a chance to invade your privacy? When you go online without a VPN, ISPs can see every single website you visit, and they can legally sell this information without your consent to ad companies and big tech who can then use your data to target you and profit, not to your benefit. Generally at your expense. So using ExpressVPN, it's like being a member of a high-tech company that's on your side where they beam you into a server in another part of the world. No one can see anything you do. Just fire up the app, click one button, and you're beamed onto a completely safe, anonymized internet. They can't do anything with your data. I use ExpressVPN to have that peace of mind. To secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/yang today. That's expressvpn.com/yang. And you can get an extra 3 months for free. expressvpn.com/yang.
I think a lot of people know that blockchain is somehow connected to cryptocurrency. And to Bitcoin, can you explain that role in this and how that impacts these transactions?
Bitcoin is essentially a blockchain. That's kind of the technology. That's the database technology. A number of years ago, especially like 2015, it was sort of all the trend to talk about, well, blockchains are going to be important, but not Bitcoin, right? So blockchain, not Bitcoin. To me, this kind of reminds me of sort of the early internet because like the idea in the early internet was all of these companies would have their own private intranets, right? Just a corporate-wide intranet, like a SharePoint or something like that. But what really ended up happening is some of that happened, and those are like private blockchains. But the true value for society, the big unlock, happened on the public internet, right? When we could combine all of these other intranets that various companies had and pull them into one communication protocol so we could all transmit that. So the blockchain, not Bitcoin movement kind of faded away a little bit because what turned out to be the most important was the public blockchains themselves, the Bitcoins, the Ethereum. These are the things that are open and permissionless, just like the internet. So I guess all this to say, blockchains are part of the database technology that Bitcoin and Ethereum are based on. But the cool thing about blockchains is that they are public and permissionless. And private blockchains that, you know, a company creates or a bank creates might tap into those public blockchains, but aren't as important to the story of this whole like new money, future of money system that we've created here.
I've always thought of blockchain as like this ledger that keeps the record of the Bitcoin transactions.
Yes.
Is that correct on a basic level?
That is correct, right? So Bitcoin is an asset, but it's also a network, right? So if I were to give you Bitcoin, Carly, then that transaction gets recorded on this network, this ledger, this general ledger, and that is the blockchain. But it's a public blockchain that's accessible to everyone. So there is Bitcoin, the asset, and there's Bitcoin, the network, the blockchain, and these two are sort of separate ideas.
The best analogy someone said to explain it to me was blockchain is the engine. So like, if you look at like, if you like a car, like you have an engine in a plane, you have an engine in a helicopter, you have an engine in a car, you have a, like the motor engine, whatever, like the combustible engine, let's say, as the example. But cryptocurrency or Bitcoin is the Model T Ford that actually changed the world, that applied to humans, was usable. And that engine, that blockchain, is going to be applied to a whole bunch of different things in different ways. And maybe those innovations will also change the world. But right now, it's the Model T Ford. We're making people go, get them, go, wherever it is. Is that accurate? How'd I do?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I would say that, right? So like, blockchain is just a technology to enforce digital scarcity. The cool thing about something like a Bitcoin is that there's social consensus that this Bitcoin blockchain is creating this new form of money, and everyone is buying into that idea of Bitcoin as a new form of money. But there's other things you can do with blockchain too. So like, there's Bitcoin, and then, but there's also Ethereum, which takes the idea of Bitcoin and makes the money system a bit more programmable.
I've heard, if you're following this casually, a lot of people heard of Bitcoin. Some have heard of Ethereum. Carly mentioned Monero. I've heard of a billion others. Dogecoin is whatever Elon Musk is pumping right now. Dennis Rodman had a pot coin or whatever the hell, like back in the day. Explain, like, breaking out all of them is going to be too hard, but maybe let's start with Bitcoin and Ethereum, like the differences, and then maybe how they vary, you know, like what, when people are, like when they create a new one, is it just like a fancy new name, or what is the mechanics of that?
The thing to understand about all of these different forms of money and cryptocurrencies is that they all have something in common. And that's that they're based on credibly neutral protocols. And this term protocols throws people off because crypto people use it all the time. But all a protocol is it's a set of rules, okay? A set of rules. So if you think about the importance of protocols, which we often don't, but protocols are at the very base layer of society, right? So the US Constitution, what is that? That is a protocol for how to run a republic. Super important 4,000-page document. It spells out, this is how we're going to run this republic called the United States. And what were we able to accomplish with that protocol? Well, we were able to replace the kings in England with, like, the people, with protocols. We took, instead of the king's duties, we created a constitution so we could give it back to the people. That's what these crypto systems are doing. I mentioned this term credibly neutral because the great thing about the US Constitution is that it's neutral, right? We've got sort of this balance of powers idea. So the concept that one individual or dictator or, you know, totalitarian regime can't like assume power in the, that's really important because that makes it neutral. So you want a system that's unbiasable, that one party can't centralize and control. And the other piece is credible. So the US Constitution works because we all believe that the US Constitution works.
Ryan, you're getting into our world here. I think we'd say it's theoretically neutral, but I'm with you.
Obviously imperfect, right? But credibly neutral for organizing society. Okay, so Bitcoin and Ethereum bring that concept to money. So Bitcoin says, well, what if we were to create a credibly neutral monetary system? That means no one can change the rules in terms of how much Bitcoin that should exist, right? It's like impossible to change the rules. It's immutable. It's anyone can audit it. Anyone can access it, right? That's what Bitcoin is. Simply, it's all it is. It's a credibly neutral protocol for money. Specifically, there shall be only 21 million Bitcoin that exist, right? That's what it says.
It's like a digital gold standard in many ways, right?
Yes. Yes. That's exactly what it is.
When you say it says, that's what it says. Who said it?
Well, this is a great thing. So like, you know how the Constitution, it's written in a document, right? Almost right. In legal prose, essentially. Right. Well, Bitcoin's credibly neutral protocol for money is written in code. So you actually like audit the code. You know how if you have a browser, there's a button you can click view source and you see like all the stuff that actually creates the images on your screen in your web browser. You could do that with a money system. That's what Bitcoin does. You can view source. Anyone can see it. You could see the issuance rate of Bitcoin when it trails off. And that's what makes it credibly neutral. And now it credibly because there's a social element to this movement too. You ask like, what's the difference between Bitcoin and Dogecoin? Well, the difference is There are more people who believe Bitcoin is a money than Dogecoin. It is more credibly neutral. So that's how movements kind of build from the ground up. I think the other part of this story is you asked about Ethereum. So Ethereum then takes Bitcoin, right? This idea of digital scarcity, and says, well, what if we generalize that? What if instead of just creating one type of money, a Bitcoin, what if we could create all sorts of these digital assets? What if we could create stocks? What if we could create bonds? What if we could create an entire credibly neutral banking system on top of this cryptocurrency thing? And those two tools together, Bitcoin and Ethereum, are really the tools that that I and communities like mine are using to go bankless, because we have these new technologies and these new tools now to do that.
This podcast is sponsored by Helix Sleep. I have always been a mattress guy. I thought if you're going to spend 8 hours doing something, you should pay attention to what you're doing it on. That's why I love the Helix Sleep product. It is made for me. I am someone who sleeps on my back. I do not sleep hot. I like a firm mattress. And so when I took the Helix Sleep quiz, I wound up with a Helix Dawn model. And it's been fantastic, not just for me, but for my kids who seek it out of the entire house. Don't want to take my word for it? Helix has been awarded the number one mattress pick by GQ and Wired magazine, and they have a 100-night free trial and 10 to 15-year warranties baked in. That's confidence in your product, and if you get on a Helix Sleep mattress, you will see why they are so confident. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/yang and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
There's some sort of veil being lifted on our monetary system, where compared to right now, our monetary system is managed by either the Federal Reserve or the central bank, the United States government, which is essentially the standard of the world. Are people interested in this because this is democratizing the money and sharing it, like, both transparently and theoretically, eventually equally around the world? Is that the driver here? Or is it really like the other piece, like anti-establishment, the world is ending, the dollar is going to fail, middle finger to the world, buy Bitcoin to the moon?
I think it's a combination of those things. And for everyone who enters, it's a little bit different. But I do think that this is a populist movement in some ways. But it's a healthy form of populism, because it's not saying we're going to burn down the old system. It's saying we're going to opt out. We're going to build this new awesome system. And this new system, this new money system, this new financial system is going to be based on credibly neutral protocols, right? So if you think about the monetary policy of the U.S., and when individuals think about that, well, what is that controlled by? It's controlled by Jerome Powell and a small group of individuals, right? And they're trying their best, I'm sure, right? But do they always get it right? No, they don't always get it right. And do they have undue control? And have they, over the past, 10 to 20 years, printed money more in favor of, like, the establishment and the banking system? This is back to the Cantillon effect that we were talking about earlier, where this money printing is not going to average citizens in the US, it's going to bankers and people who hold assets. That's why if you want to play the monetary game in the United States, you can't just hold dollars in a savings account anymore, right? Like, you're not making any money that way. You have to play the game. You have to buy assets, you have to invest. And so people are saying, well, should a small group of individuals in Washington be able to turn the dials on the money system? What happens if they become corrupt? And so this is a ground up movement to say, no, we want to build our money system. And by the way, not just central banking, but also commercial banking on credibly neutral protocols where, that can't be biased, that can't be corrupted. And so this is kind of a reaction to some of the wealth inequality that we've seen. This is a reaction to censorship. This is a reaction to, hedge fund managers calling the owners of Robinhood and saying, stop trading GameStop, right? It's a reaction to all of these things. And this is crypto's moment. This is crypto's decade. I think this is why this is an important movement for us.
Let me ask though, because I totally understand the dynamic of like the kind of establishment has been rigging the system and making the rules and setting the rules for far too long, and therefore sort of the only people who have been benefiting from the rules. But there is a movement really on the left in the United States, this like almost modern monetary theory camp that says, look, if we can kind of print money limitlessly, right, we could in theory print money and give it directly to people, right? And like print money for a UBI or something like that. What concerns me about when we look at the future of Bitcoin and these sort of limited currencies is sort of what the issue was maybe with the gold standard, which is there is a finite amount of it. And are we going to end up in a world where once again, you have a finite resource and it's all pooling to elites and there's no more that can be created? How do you respond to that? Or what are people thinking about that?
So I think that is a really insightful comment, Carly. Like, I think you hit the nail on the head. And there are different camps and communities inside of cryptocurrency. So there's this strong Austrian, you know, economic bent that would hate everything that you just said about modern monetary theory.
Right? I may be in that camp for what it's worth.
Well, so like there's that camp and they say like, no, government shouldn't print money, right? We should have a credibly neutral standard, something like a gold standard, right? And that should come from cryptocurrency. But to your point, well, what's the response when you say, well, that's just going to lead to an unequal system in the future where people who bought in Bitcoin early or whatever, crypto early, like they end up being the elites and the new bankers, right? So that's one group in crypto. But there's another group in crypto, because it's a very, you know, wide camp, that thinks that, well, we have been printing money, and essentially we've been giving out UBI. We've been giving out UBI for the last like 20 years, but we've been giving it to the wealthy, right? So maybe what we need is a UBI system for everyone else, the citizens, right? This is kind of Andrew Yang's platform. And well, with cryptocurrency, with systems like Ethereum, this makes a great path for distributing that money, right? So like, I don't know, but getting a check from the IRS or whoever issued it, that, you know, for COVID, you know, stimulus, basically, that was a very long process. What if you could just hit a button and a digital currency from issued by the central banks in the US just appeared in your wallet, right? So this is the type of innovation we could tap into. And there's a whole side of the crypto community that's like, hey, you know, we don't think that bottom-up money like a Bitcoin or an Ether should be outlawed, right? We think that people should have that option. But we also think that central banks should play a role in this, and they should promote better distribution of their money through things like UBI, and cryptocurrency can be can be sort of a conduit and a network to make that more efficient. So you'll find both sides of the camp represented in the crypto community, I think.
I believe it's Bitcoin in particular. They have done some work on regulation. They have been working with governments to prevent the money laundering piece of this, because the dark side of cryptocurrency is that if it's completely anonymous, really, like, you can't follow the money anymore and you end up in some really, really, really dark places. So talk to me a bit about where we are today on, let's call it, the regulation of this, or not even regulation, like how governments have been working with the cryptocurrency community.
Or not working with them.
Or not working, yeah.
Or are afraid of them.
So the crypto community, the internet community, has always talked about government as kind of the final boss, right? It's like, you pop its head up and shut it down.
I love the internet,
right?
So
like,
much.
So that's been an ongoing meme. And I would just say that that's been an ongoing meme since kind of the birth of Bitcoin. But what I would say is the regulatory regime in the US and in most countries around the world has actually been surprisingly friendly to crypto, which is great. So, you know, the banks are now, bank charters can now custody crypto assets in the US. The CFTC, the Commodities Future Exchange, has just said that Bitcoin is a commodity, so it can be regulated that way. And so is Ether, a commodity. There's been no move to really outlaw cryptocurrencies. And I think part of the reason for this, and by the way, on the comment about sort of you know, anonymous cash and the hazards of that. Well, I mean, the biggest anonymous cash and money laundering actually happens with like dollars, right? It's actually, if you want to launder, if you want to launder money,
cash is easier. Yeah,
it's way easier. Like there's fiat on ramps to crypto. It's open, but it's not completely private in Bitcoin or in Ethereum. So if you want to launder money, like don't do this, guys, but like cash is the way to do it. Benjamins. That's what briefcases full
of Benjamins. I've seen Breaking Bad. I know what you're talking about.
You know what? So anyway, it's actually not a good tool for laundering money. And I think what's happening is governments are realizing that there are far more wins than losses with the adoption of crypto. There's going to be a whole new kind of, where's the crypto Silicon Valley going to be located? Is that going to be in the jurisdiction of the US or is it going to be another country? Are we going to, like, what about distribution of central bank digital currencies? Well, those should happen on public networks like Ethereum. So there are all of these efficiency wins that governments have, similar to the early internet. Like the early internet, it's a little bit scary to say, we've got this communication protocol. Anyone in the world can spin up a website and, you know, start projecting whatever ideas they have. That's a little bit scary for governments, right? But the wins in adopting that protocol, the protocol of the internet, far outweighed the losses. And so everybody did it. And I think that's what's happening with governments around the world is they're all adopting this technology for the wins.
I'm so excited to watch prime ministers and global leaders talk about Dogecoin or whatever dreams we whip up. It's going to be exciting. And I believe if you do not understand this, you're unfit to lead, because this same community just wiped out Wall Street for about a week. Like this is real, and it's frustrating to watch leaders pretend they don't understand it or think it's like a weird internet culture thing.
On the other hand, is there a certain advantage? Again, I worry about these kinds of technologies ultimately being co-opted by sort of these elite institutions and undermining the very sort of advantages they provide, which is this like democratization effect, right? And so is there a certain advantage that, call it the internet right now, has in that a lot of leaders don't necessarily fully understand this? And it kind of gives us an opportunity to make sure it sort of is implemented democratically, you know, before sort of these, call them elite institutions or establishment institutions, are able to really kind of co-opt them and manipulate them to their own gains.
Totally. I think the birth story, like we talked about cryptos, it almost had an immaculate conception, because all along the establishment has shunned it, right? It's like, oh, it's too volatile to be a money, right? Like the boom and bust cycles, like, of course, every time they said this is like a tulips kind of like fad and it's all going to fade out. Every single cycle they said this. And so what's happened is people have been the first to adopt it. Developers, internet natives have been the first to adopt it. I think it would be far less interesting if in like year one of Bitcoin, the US government just bought all the Bitcoin, right? And that's not going to distribute cryptocurrency to the people. The other thing I'll say to you is, like, one concern I have being in cryptocurrency is back to exactly what you said, Carly, which is like, we have to make sure that we're not just creating a new crypto system with like Bitcoin as the gold standard and we get a new set of bankers, but they're still bankers, right? This is why Ethereum is so important. This is why this idea of decentralized finance is important, because Bitcoin just gives you sort of a money, but that money is often custodied in this new set of banks called crypto banks. These are the Coinbases and Geminis of the world. With Ethereum, what you get is the ability to actually do the banking yourself in a self-sovereign way. It creates like banks as protocols on top of it. So that's sort of, we can get into what it means to go bankless, but that's sort of what we're talking about. Going bankless means actually replacing the banks wholesale, not creating a new set of banks, replacing the banks with these credibly neutral protocols. And this is the idea of open finance or decentralized finance, if you've heard those terms.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill.
But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
So let's dive into this, talking about what this starts to look like in practice for people. Because it's fun to say, we're getting rid of banks. It's fun to say, yes, we've got crypto, we got this new currency, like the dollar's not what it is to be. It's fun to say, power to the people, right? But what does this mean? So there's four categories I want to dive into in some capacity, and we'll figure out which more interesting. I want to talk about regular transactions. I want to talk about personal, like accounting, checking, savings, that sort of thing. I want to talk about the investment piece. You're talking about assets and the banking and stock market. And then lastly is like the government oversight, central banking, Federal Reserve, like how this all intertwines. So let's start with the first one. Basic transactions. Like, what does it look like? I'm a human being. And maybe that's kind of combined with the personal checking and savings too. But start with like, I'm going to go buy Starbucks 10 years from now, and we're all using Bitcoin or Ethereum, whatever it is. What can that look like?
Yeah. So what's so cool about this is we are totally early, right? So I don't know, you guys remember the early 90s and the internet sucked and it was like, you know, dial up, and it was only for geeks, and it was just a very small community, right?
Hey, I use AOL.
And, you remember the AIM
days. I was good at the You Got Mail situation.
Yeah. I mean, you remember if mom picked up the phone, basically.
Yeah, mom,
your
you
internet
blew
swiped.
It. Oh, yeah. I'm like dating myself. I'm 33. Those of you I know, probably younger, some of you older, hope you feel my pain. Anyway, keep going.
Okay, so like the youngsters might not remember, but you and I remember these days, Zach. And yes, the internet was pretty clunky. It was hard to use. That's where we are right now. So basically, population who owns cryptocurrency right now is probably about like 60 to 80 million, but they just do one thing with it. They hold.
People are globally? Yeah,
globally. Okay. But they just do one thing with it, hold. Okay. So like what we're doing in kind of Bankless is doing more than hold. And I think of what you just said as like checking accounts and investing accounts and payment accounts, all of these things. These are like the money verbs that we do, right? So think of what's a money verb. Hold is one verb. You can like store your wealth and hold it, but pay is another verb, and lend is another verb, and trade is another verb, right? And what is banking? It's all of these money verbs put together, right? Like that's what banking is. And so back to this idea of people need banking, but we don't necessarily need banks, right? That's the idea. So what can you do right now? Let's talk about that first, I guess, money verb, that sort of the pay money verb. And this has been kind of the holy grail for crypto. When am I going to be able to buy my Starbucks with Bitcoin? Well, it turns out that Bitcoin or Ether, for that matter, which is the cryptocurrency of Ethereum, these are not good assets to spend with. And do you know why? It's because Bitcoin pizza guy, somebody spent first Bitcoin transaction in like, it was like 2012 or something, and he bought a pizza with it. Okay. And so spent Bitcoin on pizza, and the cost of that transaction in today's terms is like tens of millions of dollars, because the thing that you want to do with Bitcoin is hold it, because it appreciates in value. It's a scarce asset. It's not stable like the US dollar. So the way
it's
crypto,
like doing business in gold.
Exactly. It's just like, it's something you want to store and hold. It's not something that you want to pay your regular transactions with. So, but what cryptocurrency over the last 3 years has done is created a less volatile form of cryptocurrency called a stablecoin or a crypto dollar. So this is a cryptocurrency that just tracks the US dollar. Some of these are trustless. Some of these are trusted, issued by banks. We could get into that later. But now what you can do is I actually have a Visa card where I can go into Starbucks and I can swipe that Visa card, and I'm actually paying with crypto through the Visa network connected to a bridge to crypto. And I'm paying with stable coins, with crypto dollars, essentially.
But essentially dollars, right? It's not Bitcoin.
Well, yes. It's some of it is and some of it isn't. So some of it is like dollars. So it's on cryptocurrency, the network, it's on the blockchain, but it's like mapped to a bank somewhere. But some of it is actually backed by an asset like Ether. So it's like, in the old days where like long time ago when the US dollar was backed by gold, some of it's like that, right? So some of it is dollars that are backed by Ether. Anyway, cryptocurrency has solved that problem. So we have a way to pay with our cryptocurrency using stablecoins. And there's now something like $30 to $50 billion worth of crypto stablecoins out there now. And this has grown like 50-fold, 100-fold over the last 18 months, like just a massive amount of growth.
Which sounds like a healthy hybrid between using Bitcoin purely or using Ethereum or whatever, like crypto purely and using a dollar, which is probably the bridge you want to get started, right?
Exactly.
Awkward time.
So it's something that didn't exist. So the volatility problem, it didn't exist like in the early days of Bitcoin, and it does now.
What steps need to happen to like get past this interim stage where you're still using a Visa card to pay for it? Like how far down the road? And is there a world where we're all kind of using Bitcoin down the road or a dollar version using a Bitcoin in Starbucks? And what does that look like?
I think that payment, like in that way that you're talking about, might actually be like last mile, that might actually be the final thing that crypto solves, right? So right now, if you're kind of geeky, if you're like me, you can open up an Ether account, right? An Ethereum account, and I could pay you with stablecoins without going through the Visa network if you have an Ethereum account. So I could just say, here's some dollars, and I'm going to pay you, Zach, you know, $10 worth of stablecoins, and there's no transaction in the middle. But to upgrade the world's proof, like systems, so that Starbucks, that's going to take some time to upgrade those systems. So there's the capability now, but to upgrade all of that infrastructure will take some time. But there are some other things that you can do in crypto now, I would argue, that are far better than you can do in the traditional system. So you mentioned another thing, which is checking and savings accounts. That's like way better in crypto, even today, like right now.
Because it grows?
Well, so I mean, I don't know if you guys have checked your bank checking account or savings account at the interest rate, right? But it's like 0.01%. It's really sad. In crypto, you can open up savings accounts and checking accounts, again, using your Ethereum address as sort of your bank account. An Ethereum address is like a bank account. And you can get far better interest rates. Like I'm talking like 8%. I'm talking 10%. That's amazing. And this is on crypto dollars.
Does it have the same downside risk though? Because that's one of the fears that you buy Bitcoin, like, oh, you know, it could go to zero tomorrow and it could go back up to just 40 grand, whatever it is right now.
That's what's cool. Because of you have stable coins, I could actually like just use these stable coins and be earning a 6, 7, 8%, 10% interest rate in the crypto system. And I can't get that anywhere in the traditional financial system bank account today, right? So like, this is it's like, working in crypto can be like working in a banking system with superpowers, right? Like this is, if you learn, this is the, it's a pain and it's hard and user experience isn't there, but there's also a lot of upside in being on the bleeding edge in the frontier, and you can't get these types of interest rates anywhere else, right?
If someone wanted to do that right now, let's say that person is Zach and Carly, because we're nodding and smiling here, how does one do that? And if it's a link, I'm going to put it in the episode description for the world. How do you do this?
Well, so the first step is you actually have to own some cryptocurrency, right? So,
okay. So I got to put money up. How much right, that cost? Yeah.
So, I mean, it depends how much you want to buy. How much you want to buy, right? So
let's say I'm cheap. Let's say I want to put a couple grand in. Is that too little? Do I have to have, what's like the minimum?
No way. You could put $100. You could put $1,000. Okay, really? Whatever you want. Yeah, get started with $10, with, you know, $20, with $100.
Cool.
So there's like these two financial systems right now. There's the old, we call it old fi, like the old financial system on the other side. And then there's this new decentralized financial system. And the bridge between those things is what's known as a crypto exchange. So there are lots of crypto exchanges. Gemini is one, Coinbase is another if you're in the US. And so what you do is you create an account on the crypto exchange, and then you take some of your dollars from your US bank account and you ACH transfer it to a Coinbase or a Gemini. And then you buy some crypto. You don't have to buy Bitcoin or Ether. You can, if you want to speculate on the upside of those assets, you could just buy crypto dollars. So you could buy something called USDC, which is a crypto dollar. Then you could take that crypto dollar and you can move it from Coinbase into an Ethereum address and start getting into this bankless money system and start, you know, parking it into a decentralized finance interest account, for instance. So like to do this in terms of level of sophistication, like it's probably about an hour of time. And I don't know, like I think basically anyone can do this at this point. It takes just a little bit of, it's dial-up modem days. So it just takes a little bit of finesse and it's a little more troublesome than it will be in the future, but the user experience is getting better.
Is there like a resource for folks can like go and maybe read this 6 or 30 times to understand exactly what that all means? Is there like a good place that folks can kind of like learn a little bit more about getting started on this journey?
Yeah, we try to do that with Bankless. So we have like a guide of like, if you're going from zero to crypto, you can do these steps. And this is how you go from like your bank account to a crypto bank account to decentralized finance.
What's your website?
It's newsletter.banklesshq.com. And you want to go to the guide. So we have, it's called Guide One.
I'm going to paste this link when this episode drops.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Are there organizations or people that are working on making sure that these resources really are available to maybe communities today that lack an access to credit in our traditional systems, right? Like plugging this gap that very much exists in the financial system today for those, you know, I think of women and communities of color and people who have often been more on the outskirts of the traditional system.
I think the answer to that question is not yet. So right now, this is skewed towards the geeks, basically. Mm-hmm. The good news is if you're a geek in Argentina or Venezuela and you can't get access to a banking system because you're literally shut out, there's capital controls, right? Then you can use this crypto banking system. So that's access from an international perspective. Like, you know, I know people using stablecoins in Argentina to escape sort of the inflation traps there. And also to actually use their money. So from that perspective, yes, but it's still skewed a little bit towards the geeks right now. But this is, again, you know, 1983, first cell phone comes up. It's a brick and it costs $4,000, right? That's how technology works. It starts there and then it gradually, as it improves, becomes more and more accessible. And I think that's what we'll see with crypto. And it will start to reach these underserved communities in ways that the banking system hasn't, whether that's international or in the US.
Interesting. Well, that strikes me as an opportunity for folks who are listening, who understand cryptocurrency. I feel like figuring out a way to start bridging some of those gaps in places where it doesn't exist. Hit me up if you're interested in that. I'm interested in that.
Let me ask you this. And this is a question our producer suggested to me, which is a good one. So Soraya is our producer. She's always behind the scenes. And for those of you who want to know what makes the Yang Speak podcast work, it's all Soraya. But our question is really good, is that this new crypto space is it's all online, right? It's not the gold backed, or there's no physical dollars. There's no technical physical cash. Like, what happens if, let's call it, catastrophe strikes, like electricity outage, or I know there's a lot of this stuff can't be hacked, but maybe it can be wiped, right? Like if the data disappears, some of those risks still exist with the dollar, but definitely more so here because there's no real physical asset. Have there been discussions on
the impact of this, or the risk of this, given that it's all in zeros and ones on, you know, powered by electricity?
I think that cryptocurrency, the sophisticated networks, the hardened networks like a Bitcoin and Ethereum are really designed to work if the internet works, if the internet is up, right? So that has some dependencies, as we know. The internet has to be up, electricity has to be on. If those things are not functional, then definitely probably humanity has some big problems going on. And like, we might be in a place where we're reverting back to things like gold in the physical world. So yes, there are some dependencies, but the dependency is kind of like that the internet stays on.
You'd have the same problem with the dollar system, I imagine, if we...
Yeah, we'd have a lot of problems.
It's more like the data tracking, right? If it all blew up, like, would this... Like, at least with the dollar, like, the banks still are using paper records to keep their... You know, I don't know if you ever watched Mr. Robot, but it's a movie about hackers, and they literally hack the world's financial system, but they had backed it up physically. So after hell for like 3 months, the banks and the large corporations were able to like reset everybody where they were wealth wise. Is that even an option in crypto? I don't understand the technology enough to know that if everything got hacked, like, would it all just go to zero, or would you be able to reset?
You can definitely reset. So if there was some sort of issue with a Bitcoin or an Ethereum, and let's say Bitcoin did the thing it's never supposed to do, and suddenly someone found a vulnerability to print, you know, a million extra Bitcoin and give it to themselves, right? Well, what would happen in that case is the community would no longer accept that Bitcoin. They would say, that's the wrong Bitcoin. And then the fake Bitcoin, everybody socially... That's what backs all of these systems. Like the protocol of the Constitution, it's still people at the very bottom. So it's enforced by like the Constitution, which is like legal script in a document. And the same way Bitcoin or an Ethereum is enforced by code, but there's still a social system. There's still people as the bottom layer of it. We call that like the layer zero. So what would happen is they would just move to the real Bitcoin rather than letting the hack kind of spoil it. And I think in a lot of ways, crypto systems are more resilient to attack. So if you think about an authoritarian country that maybe decides that if you're a political dissident, you no longer have access, like your social credit score is diminished, you no longer have access to the banking system, we're going to shut you out. Well, no one can shut you out of your Ethereum address. Like, no one can. It's impossible. As long as you have a keyboard, your private key, access to the internet, it's uncensorable. No one can shut it down. No one can take it away from you. So it's more resilient to those types of threats, which is important for us, right?
There are some like tragic stories, right, of folks who have like millions of dollars now in Bitcoin, yeah, and they like can't remember their key, and yes, they can't, and they literally have like, they're like multimillionaires and they just don't have access to it.
And there's no way to get it because of the way this works.
Yeah, that's my understanding. Is that right?
We should probably solve for that. I don't know how.
We talk about this as it's like going on the Oregon Trail, like heading west, right? Like, it's dangerous. This is definitely the frontier, right? So if you screw up, you can lose stuff at this stage. It's getting better, but like, still keep those things in mind, because what you're talking about, Carly, absolutely does happen. If you lose your private keys, just like if you lost cash or if you lost gold, it's gone. Like, it's gone. So it's not for the faint of heart.
When you're thinking about crypto, I think the average person is like, whoa, new money, new currency. Like, this is no, like, come on. Like, the current system is working enough. Like, what are you trying to do? Right. But at the end of the day, our dollar is, you know, a dollar physically is worth nothing. It's literally worthless. It's worth the cost of the paper or whatever it is, or ones and zeros. And the reason it's worth something is because we trust that it's worth something. We trust in our government. And as our government is either not keeping up with the people or the times, and people are losing trust in their government, it is not infeasible that we start to put trust in our people. And if cryptocurrency, to your point, Ryan, is backed by people and the trust of people and this collective transparency of, it's called a digital constitution, the way you're talking about how this works, it isn't infeasible to me that we put trust in this currency and we actually over time start to prefer this because of how its trust is built.
That's what this is. This is money by the people for the people, and it is a check and balance on the government. Central banks will have to level up their game, right? And that's a good thing for the people. That's a good thing for UBI and getting like money in the hands of the people. They have to compete with these non-sovereign currencies. So this is a technology of freedom. We think about like major technology buckets that are coming in our lifetime, right? Like artificial intelligence that like centralizes a whole bunch of things. Cryptocurrency decentralizes it. It gives power back to the individual and to the people. I like to say, like, if you're scared of an open, permissionless, credibly neutral opt-in financial system, if that strikes fear in your heart, maybe that says something about you, right? Like,
oh, wow.
This is kind of like, this is completely opt-in. It's by definition optional, and we're building it from the ground up as a better system. So I hope nation states compete. I hope they do, because that will be better for the world, better for humanity. And by the way, crypto is not going to do everything that a nation can do ever. It can't build hospitals. It can't build roads. It can't provide healthcare. It can't, you know, protect citizens. So I think that governments will come to the realization that this is actually a healthy relationship. And maybe we need a bit of separation of money and state in the way we separated religion and state. This is a good thing for humanity.
I love your optimism, Ryan. I sure as heck hope you're right. I look at the world around us. I look at how people in power will do virtually anything to stay in power. And I very much worry about what they'll do to either shut down some of these systems, these nascent systems, right before they have the opportunity to fulfill their potential, because the governments and people in power see them as threats because they don't understand them, or alternatively will, and maybe I'm misunderstanding it because it's not possible for them to fully co-opt them, but will in some ways kind of co-opt these systems. So again, it's meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Relatedly and secondarily, I think the promise of this is awesome, and I want to participate, and I'm going to read all the resources I can, and I want to understand all of this better. But I do think, you know, to the point that we were sort of making earlier, I think you're talking about geeks. You're talking about a lot of, a lot of white guys who are sort of at the forefront of this, right? And that's not to put judgment on them or this, but you know, it's sort of meet the new boss, same as the old boss. And I really would love to see or understand how, as we are in the early stages of this, we can make it a more inclusive community so that the boats that are being lifted at the end of this look more like the world we want to see. And I think there's a real opportunity because of that. I think that, you know, as we talk about equality in the world, this is the kind of thing that I think almost offers the most promise to me over so many other solutions that we maybe talk about. So I think there's a lot of promise. And I think it also, the fear that gets struck in my heart is that the promise won't be fulfilled.
Absolutely. Wow, Carly, I think you nailed it, right? Like, you nailed the original meme of crypto, which is like the final boss is coming. You nailed sort of the bankless concern, which is let's not just replicate a new class of bankers. Let's actually create a more accessible money for the people. One thing I'll say on kind of the last point is I totally agree. We need more people from different communities involved in this movement. That's why part of it is trying to make the knowledge here more accessible. That's part of definitely what we're doing at Bankless. One other thing I'll say though is, I think the reality is it's not going to be optimally accessible right now in day one for every community. But the hope is that just like the internet, which was, you know, created in university campuses with elites and all sorts of things, that the technology that they create then becomes a substrate for greater access and some social benefit for the rest of society once technology improves it to make the user experience better. So I know that there's kind of a limited set of like geeks and early adopters who are involved here, but I think that the credibly neutral substrate that they're building is going to be beneficial to the world in the long run in the ways that the original internet was. So hopefully.
I think it's awesome. I really do. I mean, I think it's so interesting to think about these things and I love the promise that it sort of represents and what it could be for sure.
Used to run a nonprofit and started called Suit Up, and we do a lot of work in kind of tougher communities here in New York particularly. And if I was like, if it doesn't work for those kids, if it doesn't work for their mom, many times a single mom raising the boys and girls that we're working with, if it doesn't work for her, it's probably not going to work. And I think of the Fossey family when we worked in New Hampshire. If it's not working for Jody Fossey, who's doing everything, like does, has her head down, trying to put food on the table for her family, it's not going to work. So that's the key, right? Where we could have this amazing upside, but if it's only working for the same people that the other system worked for, we're toast. I've said this, I'm going to say this in the end of every episode, is Ryan, we're going to have you back on this podcast in 10 years. And you're either going to say, I told you so, or I'm going to be like, dude, you were so wrong. And that'll be fun.
Ryan, what is the timeline? Do you have a sense of timeline? Because I remember, so I listened to a Planet Money episode about Bitcoin probably 10 years back or so. And they were making bets about, like, you know, what was Bitcoin going to be in 10 years? And, you know, they probably were, their bets weren't necessarily wrong. They were just, the timeline wasn't right. What do you think the timeline is for like cryptocurrency being, call it like really mainstream or like everyday people using it? Do you have a prediction on that?
2020s. It's happening this decade.
Absolutely. Oh, okay.
There it is. Absolutely. Okay. 2020. So we'll, by the end of this decade, we'll have at least 1 billion people using cryptocurrencies in some form. Market cap will be into the trillions. So it'll be a globally significant, it's already in the trillions, but it'll be a globally significant monetary asset. I think it all goes down this decade. I think that this is like the first decade was, you know, building and figuring this stuff out, and the next decade is scaling it. So
this is the decade of crypto. Okay.
Yes, bring me on in 10 years. We'll see if that turns out. But I'm pretty excited about the future here.
All right, Yang Gang, we are leading the decade of crypto. This is not an investment recommendation podcast, and you should use your own money however you want. But I'm going to buy crypto. So you sold me, Ryan, for what it's worth.
Okay. I want stablecoin.
Or stablecoin or something. I don't know. I'll keep everybody updated on this. But regardless, Ryan, thank you for your time. Thank you for your expertise.
Thanks, Ryan.
I learned a ton. Hopefully those of you listening did as well. Carly, thank you for balancing everyone and asking the right questions over and over. This was a blast. Thank you for joining the future of money.
Crypto plus the Yang Gang, baby.
There you go. Woo!